Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
Good morning, everybody. We're doing a different version of the show today. Well, I shouldn't say different version of the show, but a different time slot, obviously, for the show today because of scheduling. We want to talk about a bunch of different things going on in baseball from the sentimental aspect of it. And today's as good a time as any, especially with last night's Yankee game. And we'll talk about that in depth. But first off, good morning to everybody once again. Steve, it's been a long week for sports fans.
Yeah, it has been. You know, there's been a lot going on. And, the game with the Yankees last night and A-Rod and how that all ended and, the emotional Joe Girardi. So, it's been a long week, but, this is how things go and it's starting to wind down.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of A-Rod, but Prince Fielder having to call it quits because of a second neck surgery, seeing a guy like that break down emotionally break down yesterday outside of the fact that his body is broken down at this point in his life. It's amazing because I believe there was a 5 or 6 year stretch where he only missed one game. And for a guy that size, the knock on him was always, oh, he can't run. He's not going to be healthy, this and that. He proved them wrong for so long. Obviously, you can't predict a neck injury. That's not a hamstring. That's not a calf injury. That's nothing like normal for a guy of his size. But it really sad to see somebody like Prince Fielder go down like this with such a great career that he's had, setting the Brewers single-season record 50 home runs with all the great players they've had over time. That's a very sad experience to go through. And he had his two kids with him too, Steve. That's very heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's tough. That's a tough exit for Prince Fielder. You know, he was, at one time, the up-and-coming power guy. He's proven it year after year, obviously getting the contract from Detroit and getting traded to Texas. And, it's very unfortunate. You just can't predict things, At one point in your career, sometimes things go a little bit south and, you do the best you can to get healthy and you go through surgeries, you try to get back and sometimes it's just not in the cards and, sometimes it just kind of ends the way that, it ended for Prince. And, like you said, it's very unfortunate. You don't expect these things, but, in the end, he had a tremendous career, never plays another game, which it doesn't look like he will. He'll end up with the same number of home runs that his father hit, which is 319, yeah, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and just looking back at his career, so the five-year stretch I was talking about from 2009 going to 2013, he was with Milwaukee, and that's been two seasons with Detroit, and that's been, he missed one game, which was 2010, he was 26 years old, he missed one game that season, had a good season overall, but not the season that he had. Home runs on four RBIs. I mean, these are big-time power numbers. He had 114 walks, though, that year that he missed that one game, which was a career high. But his 162-game average over his 12-year career, which really over two of the last 3 years have really been in the line. Last year, comeback player of the year, coming back up the next surgery back in 2014. But his 162-game average, 32 homers, 103 RBIs, 32 doubles, 165 hits, which is pretty impressive. That led to a 283 average overall.
Well, for Prince, it's one of those things where, he's carrying a lot of weight. Everybody knows that. He's a big man. And you just never know. It's not like an arm injury. It's one of those things that come in and out. And, he's had problems with it in the past. Baseball's a grinding sport. It's day in and day out. You're taking a lot of swings. There's a lot of violent movement with your neck, believe it or not. You try to keep your head as still as possible, but swinging the bat and moving around, there's always twisting going on. So, there's been other people who've had neck injuries, but it's been, just one of those things where it crept up on him. He had the one surgery. He was able to come back. It looked like he was going to get past that, and then it started to flare up on him again, and unfortunately had to have a second neck surgery, or is going to have a second neck surgery, and this one is going to end his career. So very unfortunate to a tremendous guy who had a lot of fun in the game and, brought a lot of pizzazz to whatever team he was on. And not only that, he was an outstanding player that, had his career cut short.
Outstanding players who was thankfully able to continue his career. Ichiro Suzuki finally getting that 3,000th hit in American baseball. Of course, over 4,200, I think 4,300 at this point now between Japan and Major League Baseball, and now obviously the hit king overall with everything. Not that Pete Rose wants to hear something like that, but it's more a matter of, how good this guy's been. He's 42 years old now. He's had an incredible career, to say the least, in Major League Baseball. I mean, talking about 16 years, and really almost have to discount the last 4 or 5 years or so, even though he's having a really good one this year. It looks like I'm having some microphone issues here, so I apologize for that. But I am talking about Ichiro Suzuki here and the great career that he's had. Steve, you want to reflect on the amazing career that Ichiro has had here in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, Ichiro Suzuki is another one. Now, this is a different guy. The longevity he has created for himself, staying healthy, has put him in the position that he's in now. He has done it in Japan. He's come to the States. He's done it in the States. He's 42 years old, continuing, to play the game at a high level. He can still run. His body looks like he keeps it in incredible shape, and he prides himself on that. I know that talking to a lot of people out there with Ichiro, he does a lot of stretching. He does some weightlifting, but he prides himself on stretching and gets his strength in that aspect. So, he's just one of those guys who, when you play for a long time and you're as talented as he is, you're going to do incredible things in this game. And getting his 3,000th hit, and passing obviously Pete Rose with when you combined his hits in Japan and the United States, it's such an incredible feat. I believe Pete Rose played for, 25 years. And, Ichiro said he wants to play until he's 50. And that's, that's an incredible feat to talk about. But we'll have to wait and see. But he has been, a treat to watch. He's been an incredible talent. And, congratulations on his 3,000th hit in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And just an incredible career, over 500 stolen bases as well. That's kind of been lost in the shuffle over the years. What an incredible career. Came over in 2001 at age 27. I think that's the year that they won 116 games, which is a single season record, Steve. And he did nothing short of amazing that year. Kind of like a Yasiel Puig type entrance. 142 hits that year, 127 runs, Steve, in his first year in the big leagues, in American big leagues. 8 homers, 69 ribs, which actually would be his most ever single season RBI total. 56 stolen bases, batted .350. One of the greatest hitters of all time. Instant Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. First year ballot. Do you think he's going to be the first 100% guy?
If Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't a 100% guy, I think it's tough for anybody to be 100%, vote in on his first time. But you never know. All it takes is one guy not to vote him at the top of the ballot, and he won't be that 100% guy. But I just don't think so. Possibly could, and maybe he should, but I just have a hard time believing if Ken Griffey Jr. didn't get that type of voting, that Ichiro will.
So, Steve, with everything that's gone on with the Marlins over the last couple of years, them bringing in Barry Bonds this year, which was a risky move because of all the controversy, of course, bringing in the new coaching staff with Don Mattingly and all that, how much of the season that Ichiro has had, and then by larger extension, other guys on the team, minus Giancarlo Stanton, who's been maligned with injuries and inconsistencies this year, but you have Marcell Ozuna becoming an all-star this year, Christian Yelich on the bounce back, you have Ichiro having a great season, batting .321 now, during the season. And again, big bounce back for him. 24 walks and only 23 strikeouts so far. Again, hitting .321. And the rest of the guys in that team, JT Realmuto, is having a great season. It's a perennial all-star there, but really breaking out this year. How much credit do you give to a guy like Barry Bonds and a coach in general, you being one as well with the Columbus Clippers right now? How much credit does that go to a coach, or is it somebody like Ichiro that doesn't need to be coached because of how great he's been?
Well, obviously the players get it done. The players do it. The coaches just give them the tools and feed them the knowledge that they know to kind of, you know, help them and push them in the right direction. You know, but you got to give a lot of credit to him. You got to have the understanding of his experiences, his knowledge of hitting, and passing that along to the players, even though the players are incredibly talented to do that. You know, for a lineup to be hitting the way it is, there's something that Barry Bonds is telling them or something that he is teaching them that is helping bring out not only the talent that they have, but maybe some of the talent that they know that they didn't have that's added to where they're at. So I think he needs to be credited with getting these guys and pushing these guys to the point where his knowledge and his understanding of hitting and it's probably just the conversations that he's having with these guys on a daily basis in the cage, out on the field, and what he's saying to them and on how to physically hit. Because some of these guys may have had a different swing path. Some of these guys may have moved their hands a little higher, a little lower. I don't know what he is actually telling these guys, but he's getting them in a position to hit and to square the ball up and to be successful. And he definitely needs to be credited with the knowledge that he has and passing that along and helping these guys bring out the best that they have each and every day when they come to the field.
Mm-hmm. And Barry Bonds, of course, being one of the greatest of all time, forget all the steroids talk, allegations or confirmations, whatever there is, he was one of the greatest talents in baseball history. And if it were not marred by the all the steroid talk, he would have gone down as probably the greatest player, because it was one of the most difficult eras to play in. And obviously that's getting more different and more different with analytics and great bullpen help and all that. The game has changed. So if a guy was to really succeed and be dominant in today's game, you almost have to look at it as being not so much relative. You know, back then the talent was relative to what it was. But right now you might not face the same guy 2-3 times, in the same game even sometimes, depending on how the game goes. But they have so many matchups, so many different things. It's so much harder for a coach to be able to coach that in the player, to be able to see it and hit it or just form within whatever your talent set is. And to see guys like JT Realmuto, the catcher, do as well as he's done, and Christian Yelich again bouncing back with that contract that they signed him with. Marcell Ozuna, of course, having to be sent down and then coming back up and being an all-star this year is really special. And we're seeing some great things coming out of Miami, maybe even a playoff run this year, if not more than likely next year, with the talent that they've accumulated. In other news, we have Jim Thome being inducted into the Philadelphia Philly Hall of Fame. Surprising and not surprising, Steve, he did have a great stretch in terms of power numbers with Philadelphia. It was one of those trades, I believe it was Aaron Rowan for Jim Thome at that time, which ended up being a phenomenal trade, obviously. But over his 4 years with Philly, 101 homers, 281 RBIs, .260 batting average, .384 on-base percentage, which is really good, or the point of his career where he was. But overall, a great guy, great ambassador for the game, Jim Thome. A lot of people forget about him because he was never really he wasn't flashy, he wasn't controversial, he didn't want to be. But this is a guy who has 612 home runs, never marred by steroids talk, never marred by any kind of negative news. McQuiley put together one of the greatest careers in baseball history. And by the way, over that time, as a power hitter, he still had a .276 on batting average and a 400-plus on-base percentage, lifetime OPS, .956. An incredible, incredible career for Jim Thome, being enshrined in the Philly Hall of Fame.
Yeah, not surprising at all. You know, he might get enshrined in all the teams that he's played with. Obviously,
yeah.
The Indians have done it. Now the Phillies. You know, he now works with the White Sox and is part of that organization and played there for quite a few years. So, you know, it's a guy who, like you said, is kind of under the radar, and you don't realize what kind of career he had. But it was tremendous. Big power numbers. You know, healthy, solid day in and day out. You know, obviously he was a third baseman, moved over to first, and took that to, like, fish to water. You know, started to play a really good, high caliber first base on the defensive side of the ball. And obviously we all know what he did offensively. He was just, a monster in the box who hit the ball a long way. So, and came up big in big moments throughout his career. And just, you know, it's nice to see one of the good guys. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer as well. You know, like you said, not marred by any controversies or anything. He went out there day in and day out, stayed healthy, did what he did, you know, due to his work ethic and you know, it's really paid off. So, you know, congratulations to him. He deserves every bit that he gets.
Yeah, definitely a hats off to Jim Thome. Again, just looking at his career, it's been amazing. His time with the White Sox, again, only 4 years there, but even better than his time with the Phillies. But, again, just an incredible stretch throughout his career. Just a great great guy, great ambassador, as you mentioned. First ballot Hall of Famer. He's coming up on that candidacy. It's when I was growing up, watching him, watching him play with the Indians, and of course I was a Braves fan back then, but watching him play, and they had some games back then where just watching Jim Thome do what he do with that lineup that they had with Eddie Murray, Manny Ramirez, they had Travis Fryman there, they had Roberto Alomar there, they had Omar Vizquel. I mean, you're talking about stud talent, multi talented players, Hall of Fame type players on both sides of the field, and he still found a way to show up and do his thing and become just a perennial powerhouse and overall a great player. So obviously with him, it's no surprise to see him inducted into the Philly Hall of Fame or any team Hall of Fame, but he played such a short time and made such a big influence there. It's rare to see somebody play such a short period of time and be enshrined in the team's Hall of Fame. Was the point I was obviously trying to make earlier. But, again, Jim Thome, also a testament to the Cleveland Indian system, Steve. They gave him time. They were very patient with him. He came in when he was 20 years old, played 27 games. Wasn't anything special. The following season, played 40 games, was even worse, batting .205 after batting .255 in his first season. And then his third season, playing 47 games, batting .266, they started seeing progression. And then all of a sudden, he just took off. It took him several years. It took him from 91 to 94 to really make an impact there. So we're talking about a lot of patience, a lot of a lot of time that they invested in a guy like Jim Thome, and obviously paid off. And that goes to tell you of how long sometimes it takes the great players to evolve and to become what they are. Again, just a testament to the front office of the Indians at that time.
Yeah, you know, sometimes there are late bloomers, but, you know, it's a different game now. A lot of teams, a lot of players get rushed to the big leagues at a very young age where, you know, years past, you know, you're talking the Thome era, which is, you know, I'll go back to like the early 90s where Jimmy came up. And, you know, that's where you had established players in the big leagues. You know, guys were, you know, signed to some contracts. So you had a little bit of time to develop guys. And you still have time to develop guys in the minor leagues. It's just not as prominent with everybody, you know, as you're paying these guys so much money. So they want them to get to the big leagues as soon as possible. And sometimes rushing guys to the big leagues and getting them there is a detriment, you know, to their development and a lot of times detriment to their career. If they get to the big leagues too quick, do not have success, get sent down, they never find who they are and what they're capable of doing. And then their careers, you know, get ruined and end up, you know, kind of fading away and never hearing of that type of player or that guy again getting to the big leagues. And a lot of it has to do with sometimes being rushed. And there are certain teams that, are known for it, and they want to get their best players up there as quick as possible. But you know, again, you know, sometimes a little bit of extra time or extra seasoning will develop these players into getting to the big leagues at a little bit older age, which is maybe a year or two later, and then having the type of careers because they know what type of player they are before having to learn that at such a high level.
You know, without question, also putting them in the right spot to be able to bloom and obviously focus on what they need to focus on. Talking about, in Jim Thome's case, as you mentioned before, Steve, from going from third to first, and he just flourished from that point on, and both defensively and offensively. Another guy I'm thinking about today that might have been rushed and might have needed a lot more time to evolve and to become what he is Billy Hamilton. If you look at him today, where he is today over the last 30 games and where he was the last few years, I mean, the guy had incredible speed. I think the only guy that can actually challenge Ricky Henderson's single-season stolen base record. I know people think I'm crazy for that. The problem is with him, it's been you can't steal first base. He can steal every other base, and he can make it look easy. But he just wasn't doing it, and between injuries and things like that, now looking at him, he's their center fielder. They invested a lot of time into him. They invested money into him. The last seven games, Steve, he has 13 stolen bases, batting just a hair under 300, which is much better than his lifetime average. And his on-base percentage is .424. That's what you need to see out of a guy like that. It's taken a while, but it looks like he's finally coming to his own. 51 stolen bases now in the season, when it looked like this was another throwaway season for him. I mean, 337 at-bats so far. It's not uncommon to see a leadoff hitter have 600-plus. If you prorate that, you can easily see a 90-100 stolen base guy, 130, which is, I believe, Ricky Henderson's single-season record, is a stretch. But there's no other guy in baseball that can make it look as easy as he makes it look. And it looks like he's another one of those guys that has taken a while to develop and become who he is. But it looks like he's finally becoming who he's meant to become.
Yeah, and he's getting to play every day. He's on a team that's not very good. So sometimes that helps a player. You know, there's not a lot of pressure for him to succeed at a high rate when the team's in a playoff race. If they were in a playoff race and he was doing what he's doing a couple weeks ago, he probably would have got sent down to the minor leagues and he would have had time to develop there. But then he would have been on the shuffle going up and down, up and down. And sometimes, again, that's tough for a player. You know, you're in the big leagues, and then they send you down. And then you're in the big leagues, and then they send you down. You never get that comfort level of settling in and, you know, pitching to your capabilities or hitting to your capabilities because you're always there for a short stint. So, you know, that's the side of the development process that, you know, a lot of people don't agree with or have different philosophies on. But, you know, when it's a guy – in your organization, you should feel very comfortable on developing him and getting to the big leagues, you know, and have him staying there. And there's some kickback on that. It all depends, you know, what your need is at the time. I mean, injuries take a factor in, you know, guys getting called up and getting sent down. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, reasons and variables that take place as well. So, you know, on this subject, we could talk all day and go back and forth on what the right thing is or what the wrong thing is or what the best way to develop is. But in the end, each team has its own way of getting things done, and some are better than others.
Yep. Just some quick stats right now on Billy Hamilton. So April, we had a .218 over 55 at-bats, 12 strikeouts, only 4 stolen bases there. Now flash forward to the present and August. Batting .286, .405 on base percentage, has just 8 strikeouts and 35 at bats, which is still kind of a hefty amount, but 16 stolen bases over that stretch. Looks like he's having obviously a strong second half, but looks like he's finally coming into his own. Last month did have 19 strikeouts, but did have 16 stolen bases as well, which is his game, and batted .250. So again, you see the progression as the season is going on. And hopefully we see Billy Hamilton really flourish. If this guy, Steve, can have a .300 batting average, he's a singles hitter, there's no doubt about it. Singles and triples, really, he's not going to stop at second base, it seems. And if he did, he would just steal third anyway. But you see a guy like this, if he can hit anywhere near 300 consistently over his career, we're talking about a guy who can, who's going to have 700-800 stolen bases, if not more, across his career, and obviously do a lot of damage on the base paths. And because baseball is a business, he would command a lot of money as a leadoff hitter, being able to do things like that, and if he can stay durable, of course, as well. So Billy Hamilton, we're seeing him on the rise, and unfortunately, the next guy we're going to speak about is on the decline and has been on the decline over the last few years, both, you know, in the public in public sentiment world and obviously in the baseball world. Alex Rodriguez, Steve, literally rained on his parade yesterday as they were honoring him and giving him a signed base. The whole team signed it, and A-Rod just, regardless of everything that we know about him, that we've grown to know about him, there's one thing that's undeniable for Alex Rodriguez, that he loved the game of baseball, super competitive, and maybe that was his downfall, but really just one of the greatest talents baseball's ever seen. Again, forget the steroids allegations and all that stuff as well and all the tie-ins. This is one of the greatest players that we have ever seen in the game and will remain as such. I mean, we could talk about his stats, and I will momentarily, but I want to get your take on how it all ended for him and just how sad that must be for a baseball player of his caliber, you know, the guy of his stature, to be able to really just push that and cut, essentially, and become a quote-unquote special advisor for the Yankees. You know, that's left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, despite how bad he's been on the field.
Yeah, you know, he's played the game for a very long time. And, you know, father time will catch up to everybody. At some point, the game has to end for everybody. Everybody who's in baseball loves the game of baseball, wants to succeed, wants to do well. Alex was one of those guys who loved the game of baseball, who succeeded, who played for a very long time. And, you know, age started to catch up with him. You know, it catches up with everybody. It happens a little bit, you know, younger for some guys in their mid-30s. And you look at Mark Teixeira, he's going to be 36 years old. And injuries and time has caught up to him, and his body's starting to break down. You know, A-Rod, his bat speed's not there anymore. It's starting to slow down, and it's time for him to kind of step aside and go, even though his contract says he has one more year. The Yankees value the spot on the 40-man roster more than they value him at this point and the dollar value that they're giving him to kind of move forward and you know, rebuild their club with what they're doing. So, you know, for Alex, and Alex was able to surpass some of that, let's just be honest here, with, you know, taking some performance-enhancing substances to make his body feel better through, you know, what baseball's mid-30s will usually tend to see guys start slacking off. And as he's stayed clean, you've seen the aging of a baseball player the way that it happens, especially a guy like A-Rod, because he came in at the age of 19 with the Seattle Mariners. So, you know, you're looking at 22 years later, 162 games a year, and a guy who's done it over that course of a time, it takes its toll on you. And, you know, unfortunately, the game has to end for everybody. It just happens to end in different increments, some a little bit younger, some a little bit older. But, you know, undeniably, he put his stamp on the game. He loves the game. He's super competitive. You know, he's a guy who wants to go out there and play no matter what. And, you know, it's just at this point not going to be for the Yankees. They're going in a different direction. And I just think he'll be really good for that organization with all of the things that he's gone through. I know that, you know, he loves to, you know, talk with young guys about hitting, about the game, about playing the game the right way when you're between the lines. So in that aspect, the special advisor role, I think, will be really good for him to stay in the game and to, you know, have his knowledge passed on with what he knows, because he's very knowledgeable of the game. I know that firsthand.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, just looking at his numbers, it's almost like video game numbers, what he was able to do over his career. And still last year, Steve, when so many people doubted him coming off that suspension and everything else that was going on, again, he lost his age 38 season, which is 2014, because of that. And of course, that was because of his own doing. But he came back, 33 homers last year, 86 RBIs, played 151 games. There was something going on last year, though, that showed you that he was still there. How could it be, and this is going to be the question most fans ask, that he regresses that much year over year? Was it a matter of just being worn down emotionally by everything? Or was it a matter of the Yankees just not giving him an opportunity to really do anything? Maybe that's not the right way to look at it because he's batting 200 this season. But, again, there was a lot of other tie-ins. He had 696 career homers. They didn't want him to get to 700, and, of course, more than that. I've been saying for years they're never going to let him get to 714 and come anywhere near Babe Ruth's number in that uniform. But on top of that, there's also a lot of business parts of that that are incentive bonuses and incentive comps. So how much of this was just being worn down physically and emotionally over these couple of years when you look at what he was able to do last year? I mean, that's going to be the way that people look at this.
Yeah, I think a little bit has to do with that, but I'll go back to what you just said earlier in your statement, is that he missed year 38, mm-hmm. his age 38 year, because of the year suspension that he had. Well, you know what? That year suspension lets your body recover and get back to, you know, a little bit better position. You know, you create a little bit more bat speed because you're not playing every day. You're not wearing your body down. So he was refreshed. A year off was refreshed him, and in my eyes, got him back. He was playing at a higher level than what he is now at age 39 or 40 when he came back and hit 33 homers. And he didn't have the wear and tear, of the grind of only having, you know, 5 or 6 months off before spring training started. He actually had, 12 to 15 months off and was able to, you know, get refreshed and get a little bit more energy back in that body. And it proven that he was capable of doing that, you know, feeling a little fresher. And that's kind of how I see it. You know, it's guys who come back from arm injuries, they throw a little bit harder and they've had a little bit more time off. And then as they get into the season, their velocity starts to dip a little bit because the rigors of throwing every day, throwing bullpens every other day, and being able to continually run out on the mound and pitch competitively, it takes a little bit out of you. And then as you do that more and more, it takes a little bit more out of you. And then, you know, then you kind of settle into, you know, who you are and what you're capable of doing.
Yeah, so definitely a great take on that. Again, Alex Rodriguez playing his final game for the Yankees yesterday, going 1-for-4, lifting his batting average from 199 to 200 in his final season. Did have an RBI there, and did what he wanted to do, his ultimate wish, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, which is to gather some dirt near third base side. His Yankee career has been phenomenal. I believe he won 2 MVPs while with the Yankees. He only played 3 seasons with the Rangers before that, and of course the Mariners before that. But his career with the Yankees really was the stuff of legend. His 162-game average over his career, 121 RBIs, 41 homers, 295 batting average, 380 on-base percentage, lifetime OPS, which is actually below Jim Thome's, but it's also because of A-Rod's last few years. 930 lifetime OPS there, 329 stolen bases, only caught 76 times, 1,338 career walks, 31-15 career hits, 20-21 runs, and RBIs 2,086. Again, ranking of near the top of pretty much everywhere, and 696 career home runs, as mentioned before. Great career for Alex Rodriguez. Again, marred by a lot of different allegations and PED use and things like that. So plus, obviously, the way he handled it didn't help, and the way he was recruiting for I forgot the name of the company. Now, help me out here, Steve. The name of the company that Ryan Braun and a couple others were implicated in, the Florida one. Biogenesis?
Biogenesis,
yeah. So there was a lot there, obviously, but whatever happened there, A-Rod's career as a Yankee is over right now. He'll be a special advisor until 2017. Maybe another team signs him after that, or even in between that. I'm sure the Yankees would be happy to get him out completely. But again, his career as a Yankee is officially over. Maybe his career as a whole. Let's just do a quick run on the league leaders at this point. Batting average, this is across Major League Baseball. Jose Altuve batting 363. Again, my pick for the MVP on that side. The NL side, Daniel Murphy. I know Daniel Murphy is not the prototypical MVP-type candidate, Steve, but I don't think that team is anywhere near were as good as they are without Daniel Murphy this year. 21 homers, which I believe is a career high for him. He only has 83 in his career. 82 RBIs this year, batting .348 again, near 400 on base, near 1,000 OPS. I think Daniel Murphy has to get some consideration for MVP on the NL side. What do you think there, Steve? Am I crazy or what?
No, I agree. I think his name will be floated around, but, you know, I think there'll be a few other guys in front of him, as you said. But, you know, he's definitely put together a solid year. He's been a great pickup for the Washington Nationals on that 3-year, $36 million deal at 12 a year. You know, obviously, I think the Mets would love to have him right now hitting in the middle of that lineup. But, yeah, he's definitely got to be in the talk and consideration for, you know, what he is, what he's done up to this point. And he's still got six more weeks left or seven more weeks left in the season. And, you know, that 20 home run could be a 30 home run season for him.
Absolutely. Again, having a phenomenal record, a career year for him with that contract that he signed with the Washington, and obviously overshadowing Bryce Harper offensively this year, Bryce Harper last year's MVP. So it'd be amazing for them to be able to have two different caliber guys, two different talent guys, the MVPs in back-to-back years, and maybe Bryce Harper bounces back the rest of the season. But as of right now, they have a pretty strong lead in that division. We'll get back to that as the Mets. Struggling mightily, losing 7 of their last 10, 4 in a row, now a game under 500, and now third place in that division. We'll get back to that momentarily, just back to the league leaders as players. Home run-wise, we have Mark Trumbo still there at 33 homers, although him slowing down, a bunch of other guys slowing down as well. RBI leader of Major League Baseball, we have Edwin Encarnacion at 95, stolen base, I mentioned before, Billy Hamilton now in the lead by 6 over Johnny Villar, who's had an incredible season for Milwaukee. I'm surprised that his name wasn't talked more about during the trade deadline time. But, again, I don't think the Brewers want to get rid of somebody like him. Pitching-wise, we still have Clayton Kershaw, who's doesn't look like he's going to be pitching anymore this year with that back. 179 ERA leading the pack. But now look at number two is Hendricks from Chicago, a 217, Steve, and really becoming – somehow the ace of that staff. If you look at the ERA, Jake Arrieta coming back to form, winning last night against Wainwright, who was destroyed. Arrieta winning, I believe it was his 14th game last night, 255 to round out the top five wins. Steve, who would have thought the top two wins win leaders in all of baseball would be J.A. Happ and Rick Porcello? I mean, just hat tip and kudos to those guys for putting in a great 2016.
Yeah, you just never know what to expect from year to year. You know, you always talk about the guys, you know, like an Arrieta, like a Price, you know, but sometimes guys put together really good years at really different times. And that's what, you know, both these guys are doing in the National American League, especially J.A. Happ. You know, he's on a run right now that he's throwing the ball extremely well every fifth day. He's in a groove and he's found himself. Maybe he's found something, you know, earlier in the season that has just clicked for him and now he's you know, on that path to being a consistent guy that you know, the Jays knew that he could be when they signed him to that 3-year deal, and and that looks like a steal for them. So you know, guys find out things at different times, and sometimes they're in the beginning of the season, sometimes they're in the middle, sometimes they're a little bit later, and it carries into next year. But, you know, for them to have these seasons and kind of step out of the box a little bit and get known a little bit and get in their comfort zone is a good thing. And I'm glad to see guys, you know, that have developed over time, you know, put everything together and have really good years.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, J.A. Happ's another guy that took a while to really develop, get into his own. He came out first in 2007 with the Philadelphia Phillies, did have a pretty good run there, especially in 09 when he went 12-4, 2.93 ERA. But his last run with the Toronto Blue Jays, which is from 2012 when they traded for him from the Houston Astros to 2014, he had a total of, what am I looking at here, of looks like 19 total wins. Looks like he's going to eclipse that this year. That was over a 2.5-year stretch, and his ERA was in the mid-fours pretty much on average that whole time. Now looking at him and what he was able to do in Pittsburgh last year, which I really think was a turning point of his career, Steve. And I talked a lot about how great that trade was for Pittsburgh last year, going 7-2, 1.85 ERA, and 11 starts for them, and then continuing that this year in a very difficult AL and a very difficult AL East, offensively anyway. Going 16-3 so far this year, 2.96 ERA. It looks like he's going to get a lot of consideration for Cy Young. And again, Rick Porcello there, and also tied for second in the lead for in baseball with 15 wins is Tillman of the Baltimore Orioles, bouncing back big time this year. Strikeout leaders, we have Max Scherzer at 208, bouncing back after a little bit of a rough start to start the season off with. Then you have Jose Fernandez of the Marlins at 198. And then saves, you have Familia with 39. Zach Britton, who's put together an absolutely incredible campaign, seems unhittable at 36. Kenley Jansen at 34. And then Mark Melancon, who's now with the Washington Nationals, at 32. So that rounds out the league leaders and individual players. And just really quick, Steve, with the teams. We have the Baltimore Orioles leading the pace in the AL East right now, just a half game above the Toronto Blue Jays. So I think I'm going to put in a great rest of August and obviously September. I think Liriano is going to shape up there as well, as Jay Happ did for Pittsburgh last year. It's a little bit of a different dynamic, but I think Liriano bounces back. Then we have the Red Sox just 2.5 games back in that division. And also the Yankees, 6 games back there and only 3.5 back of the wild card, considering they sold off so many of their pieces. They've won 3 in a row. And again, 3.5 back in the wild card is not that big a deal at this point in the season. So we'll see what happens there. The AL Central, a little bit tighter than it's been, but the Cleveland Indians still setting the pace there. Playing 500 ball in their last 10, but the Tigers are not helping their cause there. Losing 5 in a row now. 5 games back in that division, and the Royals are a little distant third at 10 games back, winning 3 in a row there. AL West, and we have the Texas Rangers still maintaining a pace, winning 7 of their last 10, 21 games over 500, Steve, 18 games over 500 at home, and that's really incredible. Now Yu Darvish is back, they're obviously going to let him pitch and see what ends up happening with him. But getting A.J. Griffin back, I think, is big for them. Cole Hamels has been the best trade of the last year and a half, probably, because if not for him, this is not a playoff team from a lot of different standpoints, leadership and otherwise. And then you have the Seattle Mariners and the Houston Astros back, 7.5 games back in that division. 2 games back in the wild card hunt. And by the way, the Mariners are 8-2 in their last 10, really starting to move. And with that offense starting to click, that pitching staff is setting down Taijuan Walker, but the guys like James Paxton showing flashes of brilliance. It's going to be an interesting race down the stretch. National League, Steve, Washington Nationals, aforementioned, 20 games over 500, 7.5 up on the Marlins in that division. The Mets really struggling big time. Terry Collins threatening to send everybody down to Las Vegas to the minors. Obviously not going to do that, but I think Terry Collins really losing control of that team. The Mets now losing 7 of their last 10, as are the Marlins losing 7 of their last 10. By the way, the Mets are also a game under 500 at home, and we were getting trounced last night by the Padres until making a little bit of a run of it, but still lost 8-6. By the way, in that same division, the Braves are the best team in that division in the last 10, Steve, winning 7 of their last 10 in kind of garbage time. But you're seeing the Braves start to gel a little bit, and some of the guys that they've added, Enciarte, they added Matt Kemp. So 2017 should be a little better than this year has been. The AL Central, the Cubs winning, was it 11 in a row, 12 in a row, something like that. Well, I think 11 in a row, 73-41 now in that division. 14 games up on the Cardinals and 14.5 up on the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were the top two teams in that division last year. What a difference a year makes. AL West, the San Francisco Giants still maintaining pace there, but only a game up now on the Dodgers. 65-50 are the Giants and 64-51 are the LA Dodgers, who are playing without Puig, playing without Kershaw, playing without some of their other guys for injuries. Otherwise, Puig getting sent down to the minors, which I think was the right move. And with that, I get to take a breath and get your take on what's going on baseball team-wise, Steve. It's been amazing what the Cubs have been able to do and just how bad the Giants have been since the All-Star game.
Yeah, it's been, it's been one of those crazy years. You know, obviously, the LA Dodgers are kind of hanging in there. you know, due to some, you know, some falters of the San Francisco Giants, you would think that the Giants couldn't go into those type of losing streaks with the type of pitchers that they have, you know, in their rotation. They just, you know, just sometimes can't stop the bleeding, and they get on, you know, they get on that roll in the opposite direction. But, you know, the other divisions, I mean, have been tight, besides the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs have just pulled away, and pretty much that division is over at this point. You know, the Cubs play 500 the rest of the way. It's a given for them, but, that's a team that could probably win close to 100 games, if not more, you know, depending how they want to, you know, set up everything come September, the last 5 or 6 days of the season, you know, heading into the playoffs. You know, I think the wild card races are going to be a little bit closer, just like every year, they're going to come down to the end. There may be a tie in that, and we may have a playoff game, but, you know, a lot of teams still feel like they have a chance. As you said, you know, the Yankees are 3.5 out, but they have some teams that they got to jump. There's some other teams that are stacked right in the middle there that feel like they still have a chance if they go on one quick run. But, you know, as these teams go now, they're starting to bring up some of the younger players. They're starting to bring up some guys that they want to get a look at for you know, a 5 or 6 week span. You know, the Yankees, I just saw brought up Aaron Judge, so he's going to be playing in the outfield now. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say that the Yankees have given up, but they want to see what these young guys can do. They want to see what they have for next year, what kind of pieces that they can add as far as free agents go in the offseason to make their club the best that they can. And sometimes this is what teams do, and when they feel like, you know, it's maybe a 70-30 chance that they make the playoffs, because it's a tough thing to do. The numbers can lie a little bit as you look at them as an outsider, when you're 5 games back in the wild card, but you have 6 or 7 teams to jump. It's not as easy as what 5 games would really mean. So it's going to come down to the wire again, as it always does in the wild card. It'll be interesting. You know, the AL Central will be a tight race as we come down. I'm not really sure if the Houston Astros or the Seattle Mariners are going to be able to make a run, you know, at the Texas Rangers. 7.5 games, you know, it's quite a few games as you see it on paper. You know, I think there's something like 50 games left in the regular season, 55 maybe. If a team with a 7.5 game lead plays 500, you know, and we'll say goes 25-25, the team that's 7.5 behind them have to play 8 over, which would essentially be like, you know, 34-16. So that's really tough to do if you break down the numbers, but it'll be fun watching the wild card races come down to the end.
Absolutely. It's always great, and especially that extra wild card, obviously doing a lot of damage to the hopes of some teams, but also giving hope to another team and another base of fans. But with that wraps up this week's show, and onto our last licks. I'd like to set it off, Steve, and I'd like to do 2 quick ones, if you'd be kind enough to yield the floor to me for that long.
Absolutely.
So mine is going to be really quick on the U.S. Olympic team, absolutely dominating over China and pretty much and every country, obviously, with 52 total medals so far, 20 gold, 14 silver, 17 bronze, truly phenomenal there. Women's gymnastics has been great. Swimming, both men's and women's side, has been absolutely ridiculous. I haven't really paid too much attention to the Olympics. I generally don't, just because it's not as amateurish as it used to be with certain sports, but I do always track the medal count and see how our beloved USA is doing. And, of course, crushing it once again. Russia, by the way, 8th place. I'm born of the Soviet Union, but 8th place there with a lot of controversy heading in. And there's always controversy around the Russian Olympians, it seems, which is kind of a shame for the real standouts there. 22 medals for Team Russia. Again, United States, 52 total gold, 52 total medals, 21 gold. And my last one, Steve, this hits a little closer to home for you, the Cleveland Indians prospect, Francisco Mejia. I don't know if you were going to talk about this. 49 game hitting streak, the most by any catcher in MILB history. It's now, I believe, in the top 10 in the longest hitting streaks in pro baseball history. It includes obviously professional Major League Baseball and minor league baseball, International League Baseball. But Mejia now 49, now tied with Henry Chosen, who did in 1945, and going further back, Steve, 1915 Jack Ness. He's a game behind Otto Pallman, who hit 50 straight in 1922. If you're wondering, the best consecutive game hitting streak is Joe Wilhoit, who did in 1919. Again, very different game today. Did it at 69 straight games, which is incredible. So Mejia has a long way to go, but really an incredible run and a great sign for the Cleveland Indians prospect, Francisco Mejia.
Yeah, he's been great. He's continued it at both levels. He started out at a lower level, got moved, and to do it at two different levels is even more impressive. So, congratulations to Francisco Mejia. He's a great kid, and enjoy watching him have success. But
by the way, he was a piece in the Lucroy trade.
What's that?
He was a piece in the Lucroy trade that didn't happen, that almost happened but didn't happen.
That's correct. Yeah, he was. He was one of the guys who was going to end up going over to the Milwaukee Brewers in the Lucroy trade before Lucroy.
Yeah. Irony.
Just kind of nixed that trade and ended up going to Texas instead. But, good thing for the Cleveland Indians that they still have him, and he's young and he's got time to develop. And, time will tell with how that works out. So, and my last lick is I'm going to start where you originally started, and I'm going to go and talk a little bit about Michael Phelps and what he has been able to do and the incredible run that he's been on. And it looks like he's going to retire after this Olympics, and this will be his final Olympics. But for him to have all of the medals that he has won, and especially gold medals, which I believe stands at 22 now, and something I read here not too long ago was if Michael Phelps was his own country, he would be 38th on the list with 22 gold medals, and that's a pretty incredible feat. Being if you were your own country, to have 22 gold medals just by yourself. But, where I'm going with this is what this guy has been able to do and how incredible he's been for a sport where you have to train 4 years and you have one opportunity when that time comes in 4 years to show what you're capable of doing. It's not like you can go through a bad streak and then come out of it and get into a 22 game hitting streak and get your average back up. This guy trains for 4 years. He's going against the best in the world as opponents from every other country, and to do what he's done and put up the numbers that he's put up has been completely incredible to me. It blows my mind, to be honest with you. Swimming, in each event, and I don't know what it takes out of you. I've never been a swimmer before, but I do a couple laps in the pool, and I'm pretty tired when I go back and forth. So for him to be able to do, these 200 meters, 400 meters, 600 meters, and then take a day off or 2 days off and then swim it again and come up with world record after world record and gold medal after gold medal, it's just kudos to him. And I had to bring it up and go to a different sport and just give him the admiration and the praise that he deserves for training for 4 years, each and every 4 years for the last four Olympics. That's 16 years of his life doing that. And then being the guy he's become. We all know he's had a couple run in with, some off the field stuff or off the pool stuff. And, I think that he has cleaned that up. He has done right, and he has accomplished a lot of what people would want to accomplish in their sport. And he will be the best when he retires. And the one guy I do feel bad for is Ryan Lochte, because his statement the other day was, "I would be Michael Phelps if there wasn't a Michael Phelps," because he seems always to be the bridesmaid in these events that Michael Phelps ends up winning. But now that Phelps is retired, he can continue on, and then we're going to see what he's capable of doing moving forward, because I'm sure he's going to swim in the next Olympics 4 years from now. So anyway, back to my original one. Congratulations to Michael Phelps for the tremendous career you've had in swimming, and for the United States of America in winning all the gold medals that you have provided.
Absolutely phenomenal. Last link there, Steve. Michael Phelps, according to the Wikipedia page, total of 27 medals now, age 31. What do you do for the rest of your life to trump that? Ryan Lochte at 32, and he hasn't declared that he's going to retire, so maybe he has his chance to stand out and obviously make some money and capitalize on what he's been able to do. But Michael Phelps, 27 total medals, 22 golds, I believe you mentioned before, Steve. Two incredible guys, two incredible swimmers, brought a lot of pride to our country, and will go down in legacy. But also, just to bring it back to baseball and a little bit of a segue, is Ryan Lochte has been the Dodgers to Michael Phelps' Yankees during the when they were going back and forth in the World Series and the pennant chases for all those years back in the 50s and 60s, Steve. And the Dodgers only won, I think, one or two of those. Ryan Lochte did end up getting a gold, and Michael Phelps got a silver. So, in one of those races, the swimming competition. So, again, America dominating in the Rio Olympics as we expect, and Major League Baseball has been great going down the stretch. We're gonna have so much more to talk about. Stay tuned to CarsayandTheKid.com for more details. And by the way, the Columbus Clippers solidly in first place at 68-53, 8 games up in that division. One of the best teams there. Their boy, Mike Clevenger, who is having a great season, 11-1 for the Columbus Clippers this year, starting today for the Cleveland Indians. I picked him up to stream him in my league. Go, Mike Clevenger. Hope you have a great start. And, again, thanks all for listening to this week's show.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And join us next week. And stay tuned for when that show will be on. So thanks again, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, all. Take care.